States against Smith. Mr. Henderson.
May it please the Court. My name is Peter Henderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, representing Garrett Smith on appeal. There are two issues. One I thought was not terribly controversial, and that has to do with the error in the district court as to the application of the career offender guidelines. The second, then, has to do with a more interesting legal question as to whether, if the court accepts my theory that there was ineffective assistance of counsel at sentencing, whether that error can be brought up on appeal in the presence of a comprehensive appeal waiver. To start off, Section 4B1.2 defines what a crime of violence is for the purpose of the career offender guideline. And there are really only...
You can start off with the merits when the problem here is that right to appeal has been waived.
Well, let's start with that. And the reason I start off with the merits is because there is the theory that we've alleged is that this is a knowing and voluntary guilty plea. Most challenges to appeal waivers are asserting that either the Rule 11 colloquy wasn't complete or there's
We have in this circuit a decision on this very point about whether ineffective assistance at sentencing after the appeal waiver has been signed can authorize an appeal, and we held no. That case is Nunez against the United States. Your brief cites a later decision in Nunez, but it doesn't cite the relevant holding, and the only way we could rule in your favor would be to overrule Nunez 1, which you haven't asked us to do.
Well, I suppose that I read Nunez a little differently, and I'm not recalling exactly the facts of that case at this point. But I suppose that I'll make the argument that may have been presented in Nunez, and that is that, and I think the government might agree, that if there were a total denial of counsel, a clear Sixth Amendment violation, meaning the district court took counsel off, they said the government can't pay you, you're not going to have counsel at sentencing. I don't think that this court would be able to say, well, he waived his right to appeal, even though there is no counsel at sentencing.
Look, what a waiver of appeal does is to say, I agree to accept the decision of one judge rather than insist on the decision of four judges. There are all sorts of waivers that are made in anticipation of a dispute. The one that's often thought of is an arbitration agreement. You agree to arbitrate. You're agreeing in advance that federal judges won't make the decision somebody else will. A waiver of appeal is a similar decision. It says, I agree that this final decision will be made by a district judge, not by a district judge and three appellate judges. There's nothing particularly complicated about that. What you seem to be saying is all that's being waived is the right to contest district judges' correct decisions. Their incorrect decisions can, of course, be appealed. That would make waivers worthless.
I agree with you, Judge, and that's not what we're contending. We're not.
But it is. I mean, because the right to appeal a mistake,
right,
but is the very sort of thing that a defendant is agreeing to give up when he executes an appeal waiver.
And I think you're right, Judge. And the mistake in this case that we're alleging allows the appeal is not the mistake of the district court. It's not even the mistake of the U.S. attorney or probation. It's that defendant's own counsel told the court there is no arguable argument or colorable argument to be made that Mr. Smith is not a career offender.
Did he leave that out because something wasn't, if something were charged, I think the use of a weapon, I don't remember exactly the details, and then something else.
Right.
Was set aside, I guess. And he said, I guess he figured if that were included, wouldn't make any difference. But I wasn't exactly sure what he meant either. But I'm, asking that.
And I think it really was an oversight on his part and on everybody at the district court's part, because probation said the crime of violence has the element, the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force. That is clearly erroneous, and Mr. Smith's attorney should have caught that.
What was it? Reckless homicide?
Reckless homicide is the conviction.
Threw bullets into a car? I mean, I know it.
Well, and again, that's, you know, on the common sense term of what's a crime of violence, I think it qualifies. Under the case law and the guideline itself, it doesn't qualify. And, you know, we have to go by the case law and what the guideline actually says.
But we're still back to the waiver. What you're effectively saying that waivers apply only to decisions that defendants concede ex post are correct. All other decisions can be raised on appeal, notwithstanding a waiver. And that just is so fundamentally incompatible with the idea of waivers that it can't be right. And we held in Nunez that it isn't right.
Well,
you don't even mention Nunez.
Right, and I clearly must have missed that. I don't think that the government mentioned it either.
No, Nunez, the government doesn't mention it either. But it's really weird. You mentioned the second Nunez decision, but not the first one.
Right. Again, I certainly understand the point about appeal waivers, but I think that we have to have as an implicit condition, and this court's jurisprudence has dealt with, there are exceptions to a knowing and voluntary guilty plea pursuant to an appeal waiver.
So it's a mistaken waiver in your view?
No, in my view, and I think it goes back to Schmidt was the first case that this court said there are some exceptions. What I think it implies is that egregious errors like this that involve, I should say, proven constitutional errors, those are outside the scope of an appeal waiver. Those can't be waived.
Nunez holds otherwise.
Right, Judge. And again, I can't.
It gives reasons at length.
Well, I'll have to take a look at that. There are exceptions. For example, if the sentence had been imposed.
Just think about an arbitration clause. It waives all sorts of constitutional rights. Just think about a guilty plea. It waives constitutional rights coming out your ear.
And
people waive rights all the time. That's what they're for.
Right. There's absolutely no question that appeal waivers
are
valid.
Rights are there to be waived.
Right. And the question is, because when the courts were first discussing will we uphold appeal waivers, and this was in the late 80s, early 90s, the Fourth Circuit said, yeah, these are fine. A defendant has some benefit out of appealing or out of waiving his right to appeal. He can. It's a statutory right. He can waive that. That's all fine. But there are certain circumstances in which we think that we shouldn't enforce the appeal.
We don't really care what the Fourth Circuit said in the 1980s.
And I'll...
The controlling decision in this circuit is United States against Wenger, which also you don't cite. And Wenger says that an appeal waiver is valid when the plea is valid. When the plea is not valid, the waiver is not valid. When the plea is valid, the waiver is valid and enforceable. And you are not challenging the validity of the plea.
Right.
And there we are.
Well, but as we cited in the reply brief, Dowell says that's the general rule, and that captures maybe 95% of the universe of cases.
100% of the universe.
But there is also, there are two exceptions that this court has said over and over. If a sentence is above the maximum statutory sentence, an appeal can take place. Or if the sentence is based on a constitutionally impermissible factor such as race.
You need to read Wenger.
Well,
just not reflecting the law of this circuit.
Well, in any case, we certainly have explained...
Wenger and Nunez.
Right. And I think the main point is, if there's an error at sentencing regarding a constitutionally impermissible factor, this court has said that an appeal waiver would not preclude an appeal of that sentence that's based on a constitutionally impermissible factor. So this idea that a valid plea means that the appeal waiver is always valid.
You really need to read Nunez. Nunez discusses these cases at length.
Sure.
What those cases have in them, what the cases you're mentioning have in them, they have limited waivers. Lots of people negotiate limited waivers, saying waiver except under circumstances X. And it can then be hard to determine what those circumstances are. The cases you're dealing with deal with those kinds of waivers. This case doesn't have that kind of waiver.
Right. Well, in United States versus Vega, there's a similar waiver to this case. And what happened was the district court imposed a sentence, and then about a month later, without jurisdiction, imposed a higher sentence. Now, this court allowed the appeal because that was clearly erroneous. I mean, the court didn't have jurisdiction to even consider a higher sentence. So an absolute appeal waiver, even pursuant to a knowing and voluntary plea, does have some exceptions, and we'd ask the court that the patent ineffective assistance of counsel here was not included in the waiver.
Your time's gone. I just want to just quickly say, was there any benefit to this waiver?
The benefit to the sure there was. This was an agreement, and it was a good plea agreement, had counsel not been ineffective at sentencing. The government was bound to recommend a sentence at the bottom of the guideline range. I think they dismissed the 851 notice. I mean, there was a benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Mr. Holler.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Mr. Smith waived his right to appeal his sentence. His attack on the district court's determination that he was a career offender is nothing but an appeal of his sentence. The court has never before held that a defendant cannot waive ineffectiveness that occurs only at sentencing, and it should not do so here.
Why is Nunez not discussed in your brief?
I don't know, Your Honor.
We've had this very kind of argument before.
Well, I did cite at least 12 or 13 other cases that we think are dispositive. So I tried to survey and cover everything. I did cite Wenger. I did cite Hare. I did cite some of your cases. And I don't know. Nunez comes up in the 2255 context, so maybe we're saving it for his 2255. I apologize, Your Honor. But we do feel that it's covered.
It is true that what was involved in Nunez was a 2255 motion, but it was a plea agreement that waived appeal in 2255, so it was all the same. Ball of wax.
I understand that, Judge Easterbrook, and I agree that Nunez applies. I think we felt like this, even pre-Nunez, was covered by cases like Mason, by Joyner, by Kratz, Weichtinger, Wenger. I mean, the list goes on. It's, you know, I understand the defendants push back on this frequently, and the answer is kind of always the same. So the defendant
perhaps this is related to Judge Mannion's question. I'm interested in whether the United States these days gives the defendants any extra benefits for waiving appeal, given how many defendants immediately welch on their promise and appeal anyway. Is there anything in it for defendants to waive appeal these days?
Well, in this case, the defendant did receive a one-level 5K. The defendant did receive...
I'm not asking whether the plea bargain was beneficial. The plea bargain was obviously beneficial. And the last thing Mr. Smith wants is to have the plea bargain vacated and actually face all the charges with no reductions. I'm asking whether there's any marginal benefit in the waiver.
I think there is marginal benefit in the waiver, Your Honor, because I think that even though this court sees a number of these, and we see these in the 2255s, I think that there are defendants who are dissuaded from appealing. I mean, we have many, many, many cases with appeal waivers, and the vast majority of those defendants do not appeal. And even the vast majority of those defendants that do appeal, that go to Mr. Henderson's office, the office follows this.
Does your office ever treat the appeal as a breach of the agreement and then tell the district judge we want to take it back and reinstate all the original charges?
I don't know.
We have authority in this circuit saying if the defendant promises not to appeal and then does, that's a breach of the agreement, and at the prosecutor's election, the agreement can be set aside.
We have discussed doing that. I do not believe there is ever a case where we have done that. The problem for us, Your Honor, is that, you know, unwinding everything and starting everything up again and doing a trial imposes tremendous resources on us. And I mean, I say that with all due respect to this court. We have also tried multiple times in the past, and we did not do so here, but we have tried many times in the past to dismiss these out without coming here and presenting to this court. And invariably, what happens is either the defendant concedes, which they sometimes do, or the defendant says, no, I'm going to challenge the appeal waiver. And in any instance, my experience has been in any instance where the defendant has said, no, I'm going to challenge the appeal waiver, this court sets it for briefing, sets it for oral argument. And that's
that's our norm.
I understand that that's the court's norm.
On both sides are argued.
I understand, and I'm more than happy to come here and discuss these things with you. But I'm just telling you, it's not to the Department of Justice's benefit in general, in most cases, to unwind these things and to start back at square zero with our limited resources. Now, that said, we understand and we do consider that, and we do debate whether to do that. And there might well be a case in the future where we would do that in light of this court's precedent. We have not done so. We do not wish to do so here. What we wish to do is enforce the waiver.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of waivers, are either of you being paid for today?
I don't know.
I am, Your Honor, for 10 days.
I am not, Your Honor. I mean, I have been promised, for whatever it's worth, that I will at some point in the future be paid, but I am officially on furlough today.
Well, we're glad to have you here anyway.
I'm always glad to come, Your Honor. I would rather be paid, but I'm more than happy to be here. If the court has no questions, this appeal needs to be dismissed, and that's what the government would ask in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Counsel,
you.
The case is taken under advisement.